right.
Meow, 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 meow.
And this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Let's keep it out of our heads, shall we? Can you feel it though, Jeremy? Is it working?
No, I feel something.
You feel something? Yeah, I know. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except, governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So this is the Freedom Fiends, and tonight it's just me, Diana, and Jeremy. Michael Dean will not be joining us tonight. Unfortunately, he's had another sudden health issue. He's broken a rib through coughing again, which honestly, I can't even imagine what that would be like. I mean, I have broken ribs before, but it's more from just doing things like falling downstairs and things like that. Haven't had that happen from coughing. It's just, ugh. And he's also got an umbilical hernia. Poor guy. We miss you, Michael.
Yeah, he is a mess. I No, I mean, I feel bad. It's rough. I mean, that's the worst when you, like, you know, like you said, it's one thing to injure yourself, whether, you know, actually doing something, but when you're just trying to survive because coughing
and breathe.
Coughing is usually a defensive mechanism of some sort.
Right.
You know, you're just literally trying to survive and you end up injuring yourself. I mean, I joked with him earlier and asked who is supposed to be making the bit bubble, because he really needs to be in one.
Yeah.
Although I don't even know if that would have protected him from this.
No, probably not.
Yeah. He did say that he's on to another new doctor who is supposed to be the best in the area possible, and the, you know, new treatments that should hopefully make him a little better. So
yeah,
we do wish him the best. So he'll be back soon.
Absolutely. So how's it going tonight, Jeremy?
Oh, it's going pretty well. I went from having a rather empty house here, just me and my murder dog for a couple of weeks. And now the new crew has started to roll in, and we went from having just one other dog here for a couple of days till now there's, I think, four of them roaming around the house.
Oh, wow.
Have a couple more coming throughout the week. So by next weekend, it'll be nice and full. I think we'll have seven dogs for a day or two. Big old dog party.
That sounds like a lot of fun to me. My I take my dog to doggy daycare. Don't make fun of me.
Well, no, I run a doggy daycare.
Well, I know. Okay, that's true. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, yours is kind of like out of your house, and I don't know. You probably don't charge the exorbitant prices that this place I take my dog to, and but I think she really likes it.
Is it one of those storefront places or?
Storefront. Well, it's kind of like a big warehouse.
Oh, okay.
They have sections partitioned off, like for small to medium dogs, medium to large, and then like your gigantic, like
sure.
horses.
Well, those are better than the storefront ones. I actually have a couple of friends and a friend and another former client who actually started one, something similar to that, where it's a lot more space, because the contemporary ones are literally the storefronts that you would find in like a row of shops with just like a giant window where you could look in and see all the dogs running around in one room together. And that's pretty much it. We have a lot of those around here.
Right.
So mine is kind of a extreme rarity, because I have, you know, I only take a couple at a time and I put them in my vehicle with me. And we take a ride during the day with, you know, my dog and whoever's with us during the day hops in, and we drive drive all around to the different towns and stop at different people's houses to go for walks. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then I guess it's when it's warm, you can roll down all your windows, and so you have all these dogs like hanging out the windows and stuff.
No. Michael made me give a public service announcement about that a week or so ago about the fact
Well,
because I'm not a very big fan of that. Yeah. Oh. Only because I used
some
to
dogs
be.
Jump out.
Well, that's one danger. But after working in an animal hospital for a year or so, the one thing I did get to see quite a number of, and more so than I ever would have imagined, were dogs who came in with eye injuries.
Oh,
because
yeah.
the tiniest little rock will, shoot up and catch them right in the eye, and going, 50 plus miles an hour, obviously the dog's really not going to be able to react quick enough in general, but dogs don't really blink the way we do anyway. That's why sometimes if you put your, you put your finger near your dog's eye, they won't automatically close it like most humans will. some dogs don't even, they just kind of keep looking at it because they don't see the same way in the same dimensions that we do. It doesn't look the same to them.
Okay. So now I have to experiment on my own dog.
Yeah. Where so some will, some won't, but it's also, but the rock thing is actually, I saw quite a number of those and I was like, oh, this is horrible.
Oh,
this How did
awful.
It happen?
Yeah.
And every time it was a dog who had its head out the window. Cause again, does it happen often? No, but the possibility is there. So I don't really like to do that. I have the, I have my Honda Element. So I have the windows that crack open, a vent, which is good enough.
Okay.
So it gives them air, but they can't actually get out of it. And when it gets super hot, I actually just leave my car running pretty much all day. I'm horrible for the climate change crowd because I leave my car running all day with the air conditioner on for them and just bring a separate set of keys because, I'm not going to let them sweat in the car. That would just be mean.
Or so, pant.
Well, panting's one thing. That's how they sweat. But, those horrible stories where dogs get forgotten in cars.
I know. That happened a lot. I don't know if it happens very much out here in Colorado. I mean, it does get hot. I mean, that's no lie. But in North Carolina, it's brutal hot and humid. And there were stories all summer long of, dogs and kids. And it's just, God, what is wrong with people, really? I mean.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. I mean, it's one thing for the dog. I mean, I usually, as an animal person, I usually get horrified by stuff like that. But it's even, it's a whole nother level with the stories with the kids. Like, how busy is your life?
Right.
That you forget your child is in the vehicle with you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just, when you say that, forgetting that your child is in the vehicle, I'm trying to think if I ever did that. I don't think I ever did. As absent-minded and scatterbrained as I tend to be, I don't think I ever forgot my kid in the car.
Well, that's good. at this point in her life, I'm pretty sure you'd know if you had. She would probably remind you of it regularly.
Well, I mean, unless it happened before she had really committed it to memory. You know what I mean? I don't think it did. I mean, I think I would remember that because I think I would be so horrified at myself that that would be burned in my memory forever. So
you think so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have not done so yet either, as far as I can remember. Although I haven't had that long to remember, so it'd be a shame if I forgot that already. I think the worst I did was one or two times I got in the car and I was so tired, from not sleeping because I'm keeping me up all night, but having to take them to some appointment or something, and getting in the car and going to start to go in reverse and looking backwards and realizing I'd forgot to buckle one of their seatbelts. So we hadn't even left the driveway, so I just stopped the car, from rolling backwards, and I think it's the worst I've ever done. But forgetting them altogether is just I don't know. I normally. Because usually, I remember the last story I remember about that was a really tragic one. Actually, it might have been in North Carolina, a little baby that got forgotten, and there was this whole story concocted, and then there was, they were trying to figure out if the guy had just made the entire thing up. And I think they actually kind of proved that he did. But people like that, obviously, you got to imagine, don't really care about their child to begin with. But that's always the story. That's always, no matter what, that's always the story. It's always, I'm so busy. I'm so stressed out. It just slipped my mind. I'm sorry. That doesn't happen.
Right. I honestly don't see. I mean, there's obviously no excuse, but the only thing I can think of is if somebody is heavily intoxicated in some way, shape, or form when they manage to leave their own child in a car for however long until they die.
I would think those people actually fall into that first category that I described, the ones that actually really don't care about their children because they're that heavily
too.
Intoxicated with the children in the car to begin with. They can't really care that much about their children.
I don't know. I have my dad actually works with a lot of parents like that. My dad, he's an attorney, and he's also guardian ad litem. And you know, which he more represents like the kid in these cases and stuff like that. But you know, he tells me stories, and I think that, you know, obviously no excuse for the parents whatsoever, but some of the parents that he deals with are they're so heavily addicted that it's just, I think it goes beyond how much they really care about those around them, and that, you know, what it ends up being is that they're a slave to their addiction, and they just, nothing else matters as much as that. You know, I don't think it's necessarily that if they're sober that they would say that they don't, you know, absolutely love their children, you know, and would do anything for them, you know, but you know, being in the throes of that, it's just, you know, I think that kind of it just takes the place of everything else. So, wow. But you know, obviously no excuses for the parent, because, you know, it boils down to, you know, ultimately it boils down to whether or not they make that choice to, you know, ingest that substance that, you know, causes them to be that way in the first place. But, you know, once it is, I'll tell you what, addiction's extremely hard to kick.
Oh, sure.
Well. And it's really sad, because these kids, you know, they get to be, you know, they get into the system, and, you know, and, you know, my dad actually works with these parents to try to get them to get sober so that they can have a chance of getting their kids back and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a mess. I don't know how he does it. Like, I think that would just completely, I mean, you know, I have, I struggle with, you know, I don't struggle with my emotions, but I get so wrapped up in things like that, that it would burn me out. Like it would have a very hard time reframing, which I think is what's necessary. So, you know, more power to him. 'Cause I think he's doing, you know, doing a little bit of good, at least trying to get the kids back with their parents and not stay, you know, just stuck in the system their whole childhoods.
Well, yeah, because that's usually often a much worse fate than what they came from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But as far as your dad, I mean, that actually goes back to a prior conversation you and I have had about compartmentalizing. I can speak tonight. you know, you have to have that ability to be able to do certain jobs like that. But that's also why there's a huge, normally in that type of field or just any field where you're dealing with child advocacy, whether you're actually trying to do good or, you know, or you're just a official relegate into the state, there's a high turnover rate. But
right. Yeah, most definitely. He's been doing it for a long time, though. All right. We're going to break.
The market. We'll see if and we'll be back. Happy things to talk about when we get back.
Yeah, like Bernie Sanders.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
We're back. We're back. Meow, meow. And we're back. Okay, so, you know, we do have some topics tonight where, you know, it's not just going to be Jeremy and I just, you know, shooting the breeze the whole time. Even though I think that's a lot of fun, we do have topics, and one of the ones is this one article from the Huffington Post on Bernie Sanders and his whole thing about taxing cigarettes. And actually, he goes further than taxing cigarettes, talking about how he doesn't understand why they're not illegal.
Oh,
and it's Bernie, so stupid.
Bernie.
It's Bernie Sanders is a socialist,
a liar.
And a liar.
Smells like Tinkle.
And he smells like Tinkle and mothballs. But anyway, so yeah, he came out on Sunday. This past Sunday, he came out, what I guess was yesterday, came out against a plan being considered by the state of Philadelphia to tax soda as a means for paying universal pre-kindergarten programs. Oh gosh, it's just these. Like taxing stuff to pay for stuff just drives me insane. But
the sin taxes.
Anyway, Yeah, so he thought that, that taxing soda would be regressive. However, you know, he was actually on Meet the Press and was talking to Chuck Todd, and asked him about, you know, whether the same logic would compel him to oppose a tax on cigarettes. And Sanders was like, no, cigarettes are a far worse health threat, and suggesting that he'd like to see them banned. You know, he's like, there's a difference. He's like, you know, he's aware of the obesity problem, but, you know, cigarettes are causing cancer, obviously, and a dozen other diseases. A dozen other diseases.
I was not aware of that, Bernie, but okay.
Yeah. But, you know, and he's like, and there is almost, he says, there's almost the question as to why it remains a legal product in this country. And I know that he, you know, Bernie has definitely talked up, you know, probably universal legalization of cannabis. And I, for one, feel that smoking tobacco is more harmful than smoking cannabis. I think there's definitely some evidence to support that as well. But it's just, I don't know, it's just stupid, y'all. I mean, if any of y'all are supporting Bernie Sanders, I mean, listen to what he's saying. There is just, you know, the things that come out of these politicians' mouths,
Well, it's the hypocrisy. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't he says these things, and Bernie has become relatively famous for this in the short time that the campaign has been going on, because there's constantly tweets of his that come from his official Twitter account that just make these ridiculous statements that prove he either understands nothing about economics or, in this case, doesn't realize the blatant contradictions. You know, like you said, just because he thinks that, you know, cigarettes are more dangerous, and they, in my opinion, they are too, but, you know, that's just based on this study or that study. Well, that's more dangerous, so we can, of course, regulate that, but we shouldn't regulate these other things. And it's just like, you know, he doesn't recognize the arbitrary nature of that. Yeah. Or the fact that, you know, he's fighting.
And his support, the scarier thing to me is his supporters don't recognize the contradictions there, you know, and the lack of logic. I mean, it's like, no matter what he says, and the same goes for Trump. I mean, it's like, no matter what these people say, it's like, I don't know, I'm just flabbergasted all the time.
I say it all the time. It's the Twitter and meme generation. So everybody has these ridiculous.
Says the meme master.
Well, that's only because I finally capitulated and gave up and said I wouldn't fight it anymore. But yeah, everybody has these short attention spans, so it's quite easy for people to be these flip-floppers, as they are in a lot of situations, or just engage in blatant hypocrisy like this, where the average voter will either not notice because they've forgotten already. Because there's also the news cycle that goes alongside of this that is designed to keep people distracted from things for the most part, and then they'll either
like
do
which
that.
Bathroom you should be using, really,
or whose face is going to be on the new on the $20 bill, all these all this ridiculous stuff that's just completely meaningless, but people
distractions.
Yeah, well, and it works perfectly because people get sucked up on it, but they don't notice.
Sorry.
They either do that, or they are amazing at finding these justifications to say, well, it's not exactly hypocritical, or they'll immediately say, well, the other guy's doing this. It's like, okay, you don't understand how that's not very logical either. It's just like, well, my guy's bad, but this guy's worse. Okay, well, they're both bad. Don't you want to do better than that?
Yeah, and it's like, a lot of it is an appeal to emotion, you know, and it's a lot of people's, you know, pet issues kind of thing. And yeah, so anyway, we'll be back. Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself. A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon. Your house is your property.
So we spent the last segment talking about Bernie, and I feel like I'm kind of done with him. How about you, Jeremy?
Yeah, Bernie, Trump, the voters, the whole lot of them.
Bernie, Schmerny.
Let's move on to ways to get away from the state.
Yeah.
Sounds like a much better plan.
Yeah. So we came across... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead. Okay, yeah. Well, we came across this
after
one
you.
Story.
After you, sir.
Actually, this one's been floating around for a couple of days, and I saw it first, and I guess I'll end up giving a shout-out for a second night in a row to my buddy Dave Painter from the Seeds of Liberty, who's actually getting into the small farming-type market. So he's very excited about this story. And this one comes from the Cointelegraph. And the title is Bitcoin Farm to Table, Farmers Markets for Bitcoin Through Overstock.
And nice.
What this is overstock.com, for those who don't know, is a online marketplace. They have, you know, you can get a bunch of variety of different, gosh, I don't even know the amount of products they carry. It's just like it's basically
everything.
Like a huge department. Yeah, it's like a huge department store online that you can order all these different things from. And they accept
Bitcoin.
Yeah, they were actually mm-hmm. I think the were they
for
were the
a
first
long
big,
time. Yeah.
Yeah, they were the first big company that got involved in Bitcoin. I guess at least 3 years ago, I think now. And they made a big name for themselves in that regard, because when nobody else was willing to give Bitcoin a chance, the owners of Overstock.com said, sure, we'll accept this. And they've been accepting it for a few years now. And what they have now is the Overstock's Farmers Market, which connects local organic farmers with customers. A lot of times there's Bitcoin transactions going on in the process, and mm-hmm. some of the people don't even know what's happening. Which is great. It sounds a little devious, but it's not really that way. It's just that's the way these exchanges go. And if the farmers are not actually the ones directly exchanging their products, then they would have no idea. But they're getting the benefits.
Right.
I know in most situations, well, actually, a lot of companies offer discounts just for ordering with mm-hmm. Bitcoin. So right off the bat, you're saving money, which is a great thing.
And I, for one, really didn't know that they were doing this. And I'm really happy to hear that, or to read that, actually. And they started a segment of Overstock called Farmers Market, which, you know, will, you know, obviously include this article in the show notes. And there's a hyperlink on Farmers Market. So, you know, definitely check that out. I'm thrilled with this. I mean, I really am. I mean, it's just stories like this give me so much hope. And, talking earlier about, you know, taxation and regulation and outlawing things and stuff like that. And, you know, this is where the market really shines and kind of, you know, it gives it, to me, it's definitely, especially with Bitcoin, you know, I mean, at least for the time being. I mean, I don't know what, you know, what the future holds for Bitcoin, but in terms of that market regulation, but government regulations and oversights and things like that, which, you know, I think that if that does happen, you know, something else will come up, something else will arise. I mean, it's just, you know, we're on a roll with this now, I feel like. And when I say we, I mean, you know, like-minded people, not me and the mouse in my pocket kind of thing. but you know, one of the things that really made me happy was, you know, Patrick Byrne is the man. I mean, he just really is. And, you know, I saw him speak at Pork Fest. I honestly can't remember if it was last year or the year before, but, you know, he's not a corporate person who really, you know, just is all, I mean, I think the stereotype of corporate people is that all they care about is making money, and it doesn't matter if they run over the little guy kind of thing. But, you know, his vision is with partnering with small businesses rather than driving them out, which, you know, and he's just brilliant in that respect. You know, I mean, with this whole farmer's market thing, I mean, that's, you know, that's how he's accomplished it. It's one way that he's accomplishing this. And I don't know, I just think it's really cool.
You know, it definitely is. And, you know, like you said, he's definitely willing to work with the smaller businesses and stuff like that. And the other problem is that most people who automatically assume that the corporations are trying to flush out the little guys and, you know, crush them and stuff like that, a lot of them are, but those are the big corporations that are doing it with the help of the government.
Exactly.
And that's the problem that most people usually overlook, is that it's, you know, first of all corporations are legal fictions. That's all they are. You know, they don't exist without the legal framework of the state.
Right.
So a company,
they're recognized as individuals, basically.
Yes, and they always have been. Like there was that big dust up with the whole, like, what is it? Was it Citizens United that did? I forget now because I stopped paying attention to these things because they don't matter. It's all BS.
Noise.
It really is. It's just there. I have so many other more important things to worry about. But I think it was Citizens United that did that, and everybody got up in arms about, oh, corporations are people. Corporations are people. It's like, have you ever looked at a legal dictionary? Like, I have a copy of Black's Law Dictionary, the 5th edition, which I think is at least 50 or 60.
Whoa, I'm like super impressed right now.
Before I finally decided to move on to, you know, calling myself an abolitionist and saying I was just against all forms of government and I just wanted to be left alone and just live freely and not, you know, not bother anybody. I went down the sovereign citizen route for a little while, and part of that is getting into all the legal language and trying to find loopholes and stuff like that. So I purchased one of these. I went online, you know, in the marketplace on eBay, I think, and found a copy of it. But if you look at the definitions going back, like when these things were all first written, it's always said that a person in legalese doesn't mean an individual human being necessarily.
Right. Okay, yeah,
it means that
not individual, but
and
person,
a whole bunch of other things, including a corporation. So that's always been the case. So these things, you know, number one, they wouldn't exist without government. But the big bad corporations that everybody, when they think of the, you know, when the average person thinks of the 1% that they get told you're supposed to hate the 1%, you're supposed
the ones
to hate
that 1%. the ones that get all the corporate welfare, basically.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah,
that's the problem. On top of the fact that they have these protections in general from the government, then these particular companies have the corporate welfare. They're the ones who get the bailouts. They're the ones who get the extra subsidies regularly. They're the ones who get the regulations written for them to stamp out competition and just to hinder other people. You know, even so far as the penalties that get doled out in certain situations when laws are set and the penalties are set, you know, in accordance with these laws, they're always set at what some people will think is a huge amount, but it's just enough that the big companies can absorb them, and it'll knock the middling companies completely out of the water if they get caught up in this stuff.
Right.
You know, so it's designed to help these bigger companies. So when you have somebody like Patrick Byrne, who is obviously going against the grain and has been doing so for a very long time.
Yeah.
He's not looked well upon by the corporate establishment.
Right.
So he is not that person, you know. I mean, I even use the example of myself for a long time when people always bash corporations. I had an LLC up until a couple of years ago. Technically, I was a corporation.
Yeah.
You know,
a limited liability corporation too.
Yes, which is even worse. When you break that down, it's like, yes, I am finding ways to accept no responsibility if something happens. Here, government, please save me.
Yeah, I had actually considered incorporating myself in that way so that I could do more stuff, my financial stuff overseas kind of thing. But, you know, have protections for my finances and that type of thing. But I don't know. I had a little bit of an ethical problem with it. Yeah.
Ethics were not an issue when I first started my company. It wasn't until after I started my company and then bought my house a couple of years later that I stopped being the complete idiot, low info Democrat voter who had no idea what was going on whatsoever, right, and actually started paying attention to what happens to money and regulations and taxes and all that other stuff, and ethics in general. So, back then, all I cared about was either following the law so I didn't get in trouble, or making sure that I was protected as much as humanly possible.
Right.
No matter what the repercussions or what the cost was, because I didn't think in those terms. That's what I was told people did. So I did it. Not even thinking.
Well, you know, you've grown up.
Yeah. But actually, it was really hard to get rid of that darn thing, too.
Oh,
what?
Yeah. Wow.
The state of New York did not want to let me.
Ugh,
or actually,
God.
The company
New
I had
York-istan.
To go. New Yorkistan. Love it here. The company that I was, that was like my agent somehow through this whole process, who I don't ever remember signing up with, because I actually went through that company LegalZoom and had this stuff done there. So I really never talked to too many people. I just wrote emails and they sent me stuff and I signed things, and they're like, and then they sent me an email, said, here you go, you have an LLC. And I said, okay. Later on, I got this another letter in the mail that said, okay, now this is your agent. And I said, okay. And occasionally they would send me letters, and every once in a while they send me a bill. Like once a year, they would send me a bill, and I was like, okay. So I thought when I wanted to leave, all I had to do was call these people. I called them for over a year. I left messages at all times of day, all days of the week. Nobody ever answered the phone.
Wow.
And nobody ever called me back until I finally got through to somebody. And at that point, like, it literally was over a year later, and I ended up yelling at them. And they told me there was no way that I was going to have to drive to Albany in order to close out this LLC. I'm like, I didn't have to go to Albany to start this LLC. Why would I drive the 3+ hours up there in order to end it? This is insane.
Wow.
This was all over the fact that I refused to pay their yearly fee. Like, they just kept sending me a bill every year, and that year I just said, okay, I'm not going to pay it. And every time they kept sending me notices saying your thing is due, I would send them a note back saying, yeah, I don't want your services anymore. But they would keep sending me the bill. So it actually took me berating this woman one day on the phone to finally get her to say that I had offended her so much that she was now going to call the state the attorney general or whoever it was at the state whoever was in charge of the, I think it was somehow the State Department in the state of New York.
What?
And they, or whoever it was that was in charge of all this, and she would call them personally and make sure that I was no longer registered. And I said, so wait a minute. You told me for the past 2 days now we've been having this conversation that was impossible, that there was no way that this could end unless I drove to Albany. And now because I dropped a couple of F-bombs and made you blush, all of a sudden it's possible. I said, you know, you could have saved us both a lot of time.
Wow. I don't mean to interrupt, but that's just like, that is how, to me, that's a perfect example of how, you know, the state works.
It's government.
You know, yeah, it's government, exactly. And it's like, that would never work in the free market, really. I mean, I guess it could, you know, you break someone long enough and they'll break their own rules kind of thing.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Yeah, we're having a conversation during the break, and Jeremy is always really good at like saying, we're back. I'm like, okay, I'll stop talking now. But we're back. We are back. And we were just talking, in the last segment about the
Overstock.com.
Overstock.
their wonderful move with their farmers market and using Bitcoin.
Yeah, and we were talking about your experience too, in trying to leave an LLC, and yes. we mentioned that's a huge difference between a private entity, which you said that it was a private entity, but yet still sort of an arm of the government because they were contracted by the government. An actual real private entity that's not in any way doing their own business and not connected or acting as an arm of the government anyway, their incentive is to provide good service. And if you want to cancel your service with them, they should honor that and be, very efficient about that. But your experience is that, you basically had to scream and drop some F-bombs at this woman to break the rules that she had stated you had to follow.
Yes.
In some way, shape, or form. It's like, gosh, you just yell and scream at them loud enough and they'll actually do what you want. Of course, that's probably not the case for most government. It's not like you can yell and scream at a cop and get what you want out of them.
It usually doesn't go over as well. But that was the problem with this company. I mean, even the cancellation, beyond the cancellation part, just a private entity wouldn't have waited a year to get back in touch with me.
Right.
Because I just would have dropped their service earlier and they would have lost business. And sure, they could have written it off and say, oh, we're not going to get his money anymore. But if they did that to enough people, then they would quickly go out of business.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that during the break, and I did want to stress that this is technically a private company, but they've been contracted by the state. They told me that I think they're one of only two or maybe three organizations like that, the type of business that they do, that are contracted by the state to do this type of business.
Right.
So there's limited options right off the bat. And they obviously have less of an incentive because they already have this contract with the government. And I tried to look into it and it got very murky with the trail I was following, and I wasn't able to pinpoint anything, which is often the case with government and government contracts. A lot of them are these no bid ones where it's just anybody, whoever gives them the best gives them the best deal ends up getting the better deal for themselves later on, because they don't, they're sitting pretty and they're the only game in town, or one of only a couple games in town, and they can pretty much do what they want because they don't have to worry about agitating their customer base, because the state will always either be there to protect them, or they're actually working for the state in this instance, which is they can try to punish people like me by saying, because she actually threatened me with that too, told me that, oh, you're never going to be able to be, without this, you're not going to be able to have your business. And I said, well, that's ridiculous.
There are plenty of businesses that are not incorporated.
I know. I actually had to explain this to her.
Oh my gosh. It's
even sadder. I'm like, you do understand that I didn't have to get an LLC. This was something I chose to do, 9 years ago. I didn't have to do this, ma'am. And she was so convinced that she was going to be able to shut down my business by not having this. And I'm like, okay, you just keep thinking that. It's just ridiculous that, it gets bogged down. And like the other thing you said is, if in a truly free market, this wouldn't happen, because there may well be businesses like this. There may be needs for permits or some, not a corporation or something like that. If people want that, the market would provide that. And there would just be more options than just the one,
right?
Or just the two
that
you couldn't really say no to, or you'd be, either punished or attempted to be punished for not having the proper paperwork.
Yeah. And folks, that right there, that's corporatism. That is not true free market capitalism. That's crony capitalism. That's essentially fascism in a lot of ways. And
It is fascism.
Okay. That's one of those kind of trigger words that, it's like a little cautious about throwing out. But so we're gonna go to the free market for a little bit, and we'll be back for the next hour. I want to give a quick shout out, if I have time, to Andrew Johnston. He's posted on Facebook. He's listening to us live and just wanted to, you know, give Michael some comfort that his co-hosts are doing a great job, that he has some of the best co-hosts in the business. And I think that's awesome. Like, I love that. Thanks. Thanks, Andrew. Really appreciate it. What?
Never mind. Worms.
Worms, y'all.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends, review it on Google Play and Amazon. Prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms. Worms.
Talking during break, and then, oh, we're back. Meow. Worms.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the Artificial Satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments.
Ew.
Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Yes, you is right. So, yes, we are back. This is Jeremy. I'm here with Diana.
Hey, meow. We don't do our wrestling names so much anymore, I noticed. I mean, I think I'm...
Oh, we could do that.
I'm still proud to be the Laughing Kitty, and according to Lou, the Laugh Track Kitty.
I think that is more appropriate, Laugh Track Kitty. I think we should petition Michael to change that on the website. Yes, and I am the Bellicose Bandicoot. That is my wrestling name.
What the heck is a bandicoot?
A bandicoot is a small little rodent looking like creature that is, it's a funny looking little thing. It became popularized. There was a video game in, I think, the 90s, Crash Bandicoot for the Sega.
Yes! Oh my gosh, I knew I'd heard that before, but I couldn't
remember.
Yeah,
he didn't look anything like a bandicoot because he was tall and he walked on two legs and stuff like that. They're tiny little things. They're kind of like gerbil sized, maybe a little bit bigger with little elongated noses. Kind of goofy looking. I thought it was a nice contrast to the Bellicose line.
The Bellicose part, I was about to say. Yeah, that bandicoot doesn't sound too terribly bellicose, but
exactly.
I think it kind of fits you.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of like calling, like, you know, the bald guy Curly, you know, or somebody who throws with a right hand lefty. You know, it's just, it's like an opposite thing. It's funny.
You mean Curly from that show? What is it? Three Stooges.
Well, yeah, I think he was the original one, but plenty of other people have been called that because of it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I are you a fan? Are you one of these guys? I've just never been able to see the appeal of that.
Of and the Stooges?
The Stooges, it totally seems like a guy thing, completely. I don't know.
I can get that. I wasn't like a huge fan, but I'll definitely watch it. I mean, if I don't have cable anymore, but if I was stumbling through the channels at any time of day and I came across the Stooges, chances were I would stop for a while and watch. The slapstick humor is just, I don't know, it's funny because those are the type of things when you're a boy, you know, growing up, those are the things you do with your friends. you test the limits of the human pain tolerance and things like that for fun.
Right.
You know, And so, I mean, I did that with friends of mine growing up without even really watching The Stooges as a kid. So yeah. I'm sure we picked it up in other ways, or other people were influenced by it, which influenced other shows that I watched. You know, even, I mean, they took it from The Stooges and they tried to move it to cartoons, I guess. That was the idea, to try to make it a little less human, so maybe kids wouldn't do it. But then they had to put the warning labels on cartoons, like, you know, don't try this at home. This stuff isn't real. Because, you know, unfortunately, especially boys, well, you know, one of those cliches, boys will be boys, in a lot of senses, is true.
And I honestly don't really see anything wrong with that. I think that, you know, vive la différence, I guess you could say. I didn't really say that correctly. If anybody's French and listening, I completely like slaughtered that. But, you know, just that, you know, I think that boys tend to be a little different than girls in that respect. I mean, they're, you know, obviously, I don't know. I was kind of a tomboy. I mean, I much preferred playing with boys when I was a little girl. I was not into the whole hopscotch and jump rope thing. I mean, I did like jump rope because it was like, it could be sort of athletic.
Very athletic if you get really into it.
Yeah. But I mostly liked playing with boys. I like riding my bikes and jumping them off like ramps, and, you know, and I would actually, it's funny because you were talking about testing pain tolerance. I remember as probably not like a little girl, but like older, you know, maybe, you know, 9-10 years old, be out there, you know, we would like punch each other in the stomach to see how hard like we could hold our like stomach muscles.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's
or punch
behavior.
Each other in the arms to see how much we could take. I mean, yeah, I did that. I did.
Oh yeah. Well, so then you can understand it on some level.
I can understand that. I guess just, I don't know. I mean, I've tried watching The Stooges. I've tried to enjoy it. And who knows? Maybe I could watch them again. It's kind of like how my culinary tastes have changed over the course of my life. Maybe my humor choice of things that I watch for humor's sake might have changed as well. But I do like, I actually like more kind of male-oriented comedies, though. Like, I love... Like, one of my favorites is Superbad. I think that's kind of, but that's sort of a bromance, which I think girls can relate
to.
That's a
whole bunch of different things combined into one. That is a great movie.
Yeah. But there's like a lot of like more male oriented comedies that I like. I'm not really been that much of a fan of rom-coms other than Bridesmaids. Like, I love Bridesmaids, but that's still kind of like almost like a, I don't know, sort of more of a, I don't want to say male or masculine sort of take on it or whatever. I don't know, but I thought it was great.
If we have any feminist listeners, which I highly doubt, they're screaming at you right now.
Okay.
trying to compartmentalize those things. No, it's you know, I don't know. Like I said, I guess, you know, it's not for everybody. I enjoyed it, but the whole thing is, like, I mean, the funny thing is that, you know, you said you see that with, you know, the whole boys being boys thing. Unfortunately, much of society doesn't. That's where the pharmaceutical industry comes into play with trying to stop young boys from being boys, because it's not kosher in the school system to let them act the way they want to act. Although you wonder why they act the way they do when they're not allowed to run around and do things and beat each other up.
Really, the pressure, right? I know, you know, harming at, you know, you just gotta, like, it makes you get tough.
Exactly. You know? Come on. Like, I didn't even have any brothers. I had to go out and find friends to do this stuff for me. Right. Find older friends.
Well, you couldn't beat up on your sisters?
I could. I see.
Well, they were a lot younger than you, though, too, right?
Well, not very young. The actress Courtney is only, we're actually just shy of 2 years apart. Mm-hmm. So we weren't that young, that much different in age, but I didn't want to be too physical with her. I always thought that was mean to pick on a girl that way. Even at a young age, I used psychological warfare.
Look at you.
Well, no, just not physically. I used psychological warfare as you. I picked that up early.
That tends to be what girls use on each other.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. See, I've said that before too. For a good part of my life, I spent, you know, a lot of my time with just females, with my mom and my grandmother and my sisters and stuff. So
emotional manipulation will get you far.
I learned from the best. But Yeah, no, I didn't have that at home, so I had to go out and seek it. So I actually did. I remember that growing up, I actually had a couple of older friends that were a couple grades older with me that were pretty much around for the specific purpose that I let them pick on me. it was kind of like a great way to toughen myself up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, being a girl and liking to play with boys, I got a lot of that too.
Well, sure, but yeah. You know, and also depending on the age too, because you know, I can remember being a young boy for a second. Well, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. A lot of the grades, actually. You know, the whole pulling on the pigtails thing, you know, that's kind of commonplace. You know, that's roughhousing. Right. And that's how boy, you know, and especially if you're a girl who responds, I guess, positively to that. Not, you know, not like gushing necessarily, but if you're willing to play back with them on that, that's just, you know, that's going to make them even more likely to want to hang out with you. Than the other icky girls.
Yeah, the ones with cooties. I didn't have cooties.
Lucky you. See, I think I had cooties for like, it went through cycles in my school. I think I remember growing up, some kids would have cooties for a little while, then they didn't. It was like, you know, the initiation phases. If you before you were one of the cool kids, and then if you were on the outs because you made one of the other cool kids mad, then all of a sudden you had cooties for a while.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, I mean it's just when kids are allowed to sort of, you know, interact with each other normally without a lot of intervention and that type of thing. I mean, yeah, those things happen. I mean, obviously, we don't like bullying. I mean, I don't like bullying. I don't know about you, but.
Oh, I love it.
And, you know, it can definitely be taken too far. But, you know, me too. But, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I definitely think that there's a societal aspect to it. I mean, you know. I mean, just to wax a little like philosophical about it, I guess, you know, from the time we're born, you know, we're indoctrinated with, you know, the idea of this, you know, all powerful, like, entity that is supposed to be there to, you know, protect us and all this other stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's like a bully mentality anyway in this country. I don't know about other countries, but I think it gets in there and you know, they kids learn that, you know, they get some sort of benefit from preying on those that are, that at least appear to be weaker than they are.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely fostered from a very young age. And, you know, I think the one thing you said about, you know, the time when the kids are actually allowed to engage, you know, interact with each other, that's the thing. They're allowed to, because even that is forced. And, you know, that gets into the whole problem with the government schools in general. It's, you know, and always the common knock against the homeschooling or unschooling is the socialization. How will they get socialized? It's forcing children to be in a building together and then in a smaller room in that building for extended periods of time for the majority of a year, for 12 straight years.
Yeah, sometimes
all
kids
with kids the same age is not socialization.
That is not the
definition of indoctrination, even without the content of what's being given to them. Just that alone, being conditioned that you need to be with people your own age, and that you need to compete within the people in your own age bracket,
regardless of temperament.
And it's these people that are these age that live in this specific area. These are the people that you're going to be with for 12
whether
years
you like it or not.
Exactly, you know. Yeah. Or even like, I mean, when I grew up, I mean, I was in a tiny little town, so even like my elementary school, I had to be like shipped to like a town that actually had more people. And then we went to a bigger high school that had, you know, I grew up in a town of 200. I think there was under 200 people when I lived there. And then I got shipped to a school that was far enough away to encompass all the schools, and the graduating class had 2000. But still, we were all forced together. So wasn't the most pleasant experience.
I mean, even at the doggy daycare, they separate the dogs according to their size. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, there might be a temperament thing, but I know my dog doesn't really like big dogs that much.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Talking earlier about the wonders of government regulation and what it does to
before we spend a whole other really long segment shooting the breeze again.
That tends to happen.
We threw in some like dissing government schools kind of thing, so that's good. I want to say like those of you that know me and know my dog and stuff, her name is Roxy. She's a sweetheart. It's not that she doesn't like big dogs. She just, I think this is probably a little bit of a good, maybe a metaphor for how, schools, when kids are not allowed to just kind of interact freely with who they want to interact with kind of thing. Bad things happen. And I think that with my dog, what her tendency is to, if she's on the leash, which, yeah, leash her, hey, I'm her steward and I feel like I need to keep her safe kind of thing. But when she's on the leash and there's a big dog that comes up and, is all in her face and all super excited to meet her and all this other stuff, she just doesn't dig that very much. But, when we're at the dog park and she's just running around, she'll like play with all the big dogs and get them to chase her and stuff. And, she'll still yell at them a little bit, but it doesn't get out of hand. It tends to get a little out of hand on the leash and that's not good. But overall, she's a really good natured dog.
Well, from a behavioral aspect, being that I kind of dabble in that type of work, it actually is. When they're on the leash, they're usually in more of a protective mode in general because they're used to walking with their owner, who they're usually bonding with on some level, but also supposed to be, for the most part, some type of protection for you while you're out there in case something is to happen. And I have that when people come to the house with dogs for new client interviews and they come in with the dog on the leash and they want to keep the dog on the leash. And I try to tell people right away, pretty much all the time, no, I'd really would prefer if you either drop the leash at the very least or took it off altogether. Cause it's much better. Obviously if your dogs are meeting on the street for the first time where there's the possibility of other things happening, sure, that it's kind of unavoidable, but I send the dogs out in my backyard right away. And I'm like, no leash, just let them, because when they're freer, they can run away from each other. They can run towards each other. They can do a lot more things. They have a lot more freedom. They can do it on their terms.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think does tie to the school thing nicely because, again, it's when kids are forced together, there's more chance for bad things to happen rather than letting them learn on their own and experience on their own and engage and pull back at their own pace and also talk to obviously I guess we're going to keep going with the school thing, which is fine with me. I could talk about this all the time. But with because as somebody who has two young children who is going to be starting the unschooling process essentially with them soon, and having other friends, thank you, and having other friends and met other people over the past couple of years who have done this and have been doing this and are still doing this, they deal with the same silly questions all the time or the same accusations. Oh, they're not going to be socialized. It's like, my other co-host on the Seeds of Liberty, Danilo Cuellar, is actually an excellent example of this. He has a 3 and a 5 year old, soon to be 6 and 4, I think. And they are they, you know, they are homeschooling slash unschooling them, and have been since the pretty much, you know, since the beginning. I think, you know, when his son was two, he figured all this out. So before anything had really happened, he, you know, perfect timing. And, you know, he's a big proponent of this, and he talks about it a lot. He has his own podcast that he interviews a lot of people who do this type of stuff. But the one thing he gets a lot with people, they always ask him, and he says, you know, just look at my kids for a second. Just watch what they do. And people sit back and watch. And his kids have no fear of, like, adults or anybody else. Not like where they'll talk to anybody. Like, they're not cognizant of being, like, you know, stranger danger to a certain extent, obviously. Yeah. Like, they have that recognition. Yeah. But they are much more confident. You know, a lot of kids who are put in these positions where they are forced into these, you know, being with the kids of the same age and having to do certain things at a certain time, because there's this one dominant force, or maybe a couple dominant forces, as the teacher or the teachers, that's the only authority figure, that's the only person they look to, they have, and that person is supposed to automatically command a certain level of respect, that they may not get to engage with that person as they would with somebody they meet in the park, or somebody they meet in the supermarket, or one of mommy and daddy's friends that comes over with their kids so they can play, but they also talk to you and ask you questions and try to engage with you and stuff like that. And it's remarkable to see, because, you know, I'm more cognizant of this now, and I see it in other kids. And, you know, my two unfortunately are still a little too attached to each other because they got that twin thing going on that I
think
but on the whole, you see,
they're like the same person.
No, it's scary. No, they're really not,
I know.
We'll have to continue that after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of seeing peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Alerted. Speaking of alerted, we were talking about dogs being alerted to things. We were alerted to this article about civil asset forfeiture, one of our favorite topics. It's awesome.
There's nothing civil about this. That's Orwellian to the max right there title.
Oh. Yeah, it's so this is a article in the Washington Post. Title of the article is "How Police Took $53,000 from a Christian band, an orphanage, and a church." Nice.
Good job, government.
Yeah, good job. Woohoo! You know, yeah, like protecting and serving, whether we like it or not.
The you know what out of you.
Yeah. So basically, you know, this particular incident happened back in February. A 40-year-old Texas man who was also a refugee from Burma became a U.S. citizen more than a decade ago. Bet he's regarding that a little bit. was heading home to Dallas to check on his family. He was on a break from touring the country for months as a volunteer manager for the Chloe and Quay music team, a Christian rock ensemble from Burma, also known as Myanmar. The group was touring the United States to raise funds for a Christian college in Burma and an orphanage in Thailand. So he managed. So this, you know, Awa. It's not Elwa. Awa. This evil man. He was managing the band's finances and holding on to all the cash receipts that, you know, that they raised from ticket and merchandise sales at concerts. And by the time he was stopped in Oklahoma, the band had held concerts in 19 cities across the U.S. and raised money via tickets that sold for $10 to $20 each. So sheriff's deputies in Muskegee County, Oklahoma, pulled him over for a broken taillight. on February 27th, a broken taillight. The deputy started asking questions, a lot of them, probably, but I don't know, well, maybe a little bit of racial profiling going on there. The deputy started asking questions, a lot of them, and at some point they brought out a drug sniffing dog, which alerted on the car, and that's when they found the cash. There was roughly $33,000 from ticket sales and donations, much of it earmarked for the religious college back in Burma, according to AWA and the band members. Anyway, there was a ton of money. And, you know, he actually, let's see, some of it was in a blue and white gift bag that he had been asked to hold. So basically he was carrying all this cash.
How much it was.
Yeah, all told, they found $53,000 in cash that night. County Sheriff said he couldn't comment on the particulars. County Sheriff Charles Pearson said he couldn't comment on the particulars of AWA's case because of the open investigation, but it is clear from his deputy's affidavit that the officers didn't like AWA's explanation for how he got the cash. Oh, really? Being a manager of a Christian rock band, raising money for orphanages and churches? Okay, anyway, despite the positive alert, there were inconsistent stories, and more than likely his first language is not English, so there's that too.
Yes.
They found no drugs, paraphernalia, or weapons were found. Okay, keep in mind he was stopped for a broken taillight. Okay, and all they found was the cash. He was interrogated for several hours. And, you know, they took him to the police station and interrogated him. And, I mean, it's just the bottom line, you know, they took all his money.
Well, yeah, they let him go, too. That was the thing. They interrogated him for a couple hours, and they let him go, and they didn't charge him with anything other than the ticket for the broken taillight. But they kept the money.
And you know, the property receipt for the money says possession of drug proceeds.
Yeah, even though, like you said, they found nothing. And, I mean, there's so many problems with this story. I don't even know where to start. The drug sniffing dog, for one thing. Now, like you said, why the drug sniffing dog come out? What caused them to alert that? I think we were talking about that during the break. Mm-hmm. Why they were asking so many questions to begin with. Is it the racial profiling, like you suggested? Quite possibly. Mm-hmm. Maybe the guy was lost. He was tired because he was traveling. Like they said, he had just done 19 different stops, you know, and he's confused. So he may have seemed suspicious to them. But unfortunately,
when a cop is questioning you, you're going to be nervous.
Well, yes, most people are not relieved to have a cop pull them over and ask them questions when they're just trying to get somewhere.
It's one of the scarier things in life to experience, by a cop.
Exactly. Even most people who say they abide by the law and would never even dream of giving up cops are not exactly, you know, overwhelmed with joy when that happens to them. So, you know, for whatever reason, they decided to pull out the drug sniffing dog. But the problem with these dogs, and this has been proven time and time again, there's been plenty of tests done with this, and people have shown that these dogs, I mean, again, from a behavioral standpoint, because I know they can be trained to search these things out, because I train dogs to search out things to supplement herding dogs and working dogs that are not getting the amount of exercise they need. There's games you could teach them, search and rescue games that you teach them in order to get the extra energy exerted from them. So I know that it can be done, but a lot of the times these dogs are also trained to respond to the officers, not just to the smells. So there's sound commands, there's hand gestures that the dogs are also trained. So at any point, I've seen videos where a cop has like walked by and you see him like wrap his hands on the hood of the car in a certain way as he goes by, and the dog immediately goes nuts. And it's like, yeah, you train the dog to do that. You know?
So you're saying that the police deliberately train the dogs to respond to cues like that?
Yeah, oh,
or,
sure.
Or are they? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying all of them, but this has right. been documented that it's been done before. Like cops have been caught doing this, and I've seen videos of stuff like this. So yes, there are officers yeah. out there that do this because
animals do respond to cue like unconscious cues too. You know?
Oh, of course. Well, Pavlov's dog. It's the whole thing. That's right. the whole idea about it. But yeah, so that definitely happens. And then even after they search his entire car and they find nothing, they still keep the money and, you know, like you said, on the receipt wrote because it, you know, drug money essentially.
Right. Yeah.
And the other thing that I saw further down in the article was the fact that they took all the money, and like you, the other thing you had said is that most of it was earmarked for certain things. Now, yes, right. could he have made all this stuff up? But, you know, fast forward to the punchline of the story when they're finally going to end up throwing this thing out, hopefully, that, oh, when once we finally check, yes, this orphanage exists, this whole organization exists, like all of this stuff does add up, so this was earmarked properly. But it was all set aside, you know, for these different places in envelopes with notes written on them and stuff like that. But they took all of that and still left him with a personal check that had been written to him for $300. And the one thing I think it was his lawyer actually asked was, if they were really convinced that this was possible drug money, that they had to take it all from him immediately, mm-hmm. why would they leave the check? The
yeah.
only possible explanation is they couldn't cash that. So they had no interest in it because civil asset forfeiture is almost never about safety. It's about revenue generation.
Right. Yep.
Because that's what the, you know, there's been stories lately that a couple of different states have started to reform their laws when it comes to these things. But on the whole, it still exists, you know.
Right.
It exists on a federal level.
Like, on the federal level, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the Obama administration has talked about getting rid of it, but I don't think they've actually gotten around to doing it just yet. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, and the worst thing is it actually states in the statutes for this that, you know, the burden of proof is on the property owner. In any other situation, the burden of proof is supposed to be on the state to prove
exactly.
your guilt.
Exactly.
But the burden of proof, because actually, I mean, it says it in this article, and this is written so many other places. I see it all the time. It says, under mm-hmm. civil asset forfeiture, the burden of proof is on the property owner to prove their innocence to get their stuff back, which literally turns common law principle on its head.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Because you're guilty it's until disgusting. Proven innocent. It is. Yep. And it's and so, you know, I mean, this guy's lucky, because the one thing this article does say is that this was put out earlier this morning, the article, and there was an editor's note that as of this afternoon, the district attorney in Muskegee County has dropped both the civil and criminal charges.
And they're going to mail him a check to his lawyers as soon as, quote unquote, as soon as possible.
As soon as possible, which mm-hmm. is a happy ending, I guess. Hopefully he'll get it all back really soon. Yep. Not exactly mm-hmm. likely. But the fact that he's going to get it at all is a big step up, because there's tons of people all over the country that still have their things being held for years and years and years as these investigations get drawn out. And as you can see with this example, a lot of times, it has nothing to do with drugs. It has nothing to do with these illicit activities that they're supposed to be stopping. It's just a matter of, if you have over this certain amount of restricted amount of money, you can possibly become a target. And the cops' eyes light up when they see this stuff, because mm-hmm. they, in most states, they've been doing this for years and they get to keep the money. And then
they get to keep the money and they spend the money on them, all these frivolous things where they're it's just so gosh it's just like I mean it's just another more evidence to show that, you know, I mean that really they're nothing more about than highway robbers.
Yes, that's exactly what they are. They are like people, you know, a lot of when I engage with people who still believe in government, they get very mad when I call police officers rolling extortion agents, mm-hmm. because that's exactly what they are. They are, like you said, they're highway robbers. I mean, we talked about this last night on the show with Randy and Michael about the changing the taxation is theft to taxation is slavery, because it's it's actually more accurately robbery, although Randy did concur with me a little bit that there might be extortion involved, but it's the same thing. You were under the threat of force. They have a gun. You yeah. give us, you have more than this amount of money, or they take it even under that. Like, you know, there's yeah. customs. There's a certain amount of money you're not allowed to bring in, but the cops will just, it must be illicit. So we're just going to take it just in case. And you may or may not get it back at some point, you know? Yeah. And what if you have that money because you're going to use it to somehow help somebody save their life, you know, in a black right. market scenario, because the bureaucracy of the medical system is bogged down, you know, like anything. You have no yeah. idea what could happen or why these people have this money, but they just assume the worst and get to use it for their own benefit, so they don't care.
Yeah. And this poor guy, I mean, it does say that English isn't his first language. And, you know, they all had a hard time understanding each other. And, of course, he's being interrogated. And it's scary. It just is.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free Android app for your phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd. The app is available now from the Google Play Store, from Amazon, and from freedomfiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode feature, and so much more. You know, the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world. But when the fiends aren't live, you can also use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Tell two friends. Review it on Google Play and Amazon. Prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for lip there with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms.
Yeah. Anyway, talking a little bit during the break about work. Wishing I could set my own hours. I'd still get my work done. I'm just not a morning person, okay?
Who is?
Okay, so this is our final segment, and it's typically where we do our redemption in the third act. And this is a great article about a young man in, let's see, where is he? He's in Missouri. Mm-hmm. This is on the Fox5NewYork.com. website, and it's a boy who sells lemonade to help pay for his own adoption. A third grader in Missouri has been selling lemonade to help pay for his adoption. He has been through so much already in his young life and wants to remain with the only stable family he's ever known. 9-year-old Tristan Jacobson sold $1 lemonades Friday in front of the home in Springfield he shares with Donnie and Jimmy Davis, who have been Tristan's kinship guardians since he was 5. The lemonade stand and a weekend yard sale raised $7,100 to assist wow. with the adoption legal fees. and notice it says assist. So the adoption legal fees are probably much higher. And a further $11,000 has been donated via youcaring.com. Donnie Davis says there's not enough words to say thank you to everyone. He says Tristan is already our son in our hearts, but we want to make it official. He wants to have our last name. Already he has decided he wants to change his first name, and we are letting him. He has picked out the name of Quill. I like this Quill, like, you know, mm-hmm. porcupines. Anyway, Tristan Davis. He is so excited. He tries to tell his teachers to call him that now. He's such an awesome kid. And there's more background. There's a, you know, we'll include this article in the show notes, and there's a hyperlink on his Tristan's youcaring.com page, and you know, tells a backstory about him. It says some readers may find them shocking and disturbing, which is not terribly surprising. But I mean, look at the resiliency of this kid. You know, it's like, you know, he's come through these circumstances and he's taken it upon himself to help raise money to pay for his own adoption. You know, and he's doing that despite the way that the system is set up and how hard it is, how difficult it really is for the average person to adopt
yeah.
in this country, you know, it, and it's ridiculous. I mean, I think that a lot of the issues with, you know, with abortion and things, you know, things that, you know, that are, you know, sadly, I don't want to say necessary, but sadly they happen because, you know, putting your kid up for adoption, you know, working with, you know, adoptive parents, working through the system, working through all the legalities around it. It's just, it makes no sense. And this is probably another example of revenue generation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It is to a certain extent, as are most government programs. Mm-hmm. But the adoption thing, because, well, again, just like pretty much every other government program, it necessarily disadvantages the poorer amongst
exactly.
us.
Exactly, yeah.
Because it sets barriers, just like in the business world, it sets barriers to entry. It sets barriers to for people who, you know, maybe people who could afford to raise a child but cannot mm-hmm. physically bear a child for whatever reason and are willing to take a child in, but have to jump through all the hoops and have yeah. to pay all these exorbitant fees and go through all the, you know, I mean, it's one thing because they'll, in these type of situations, government will always put, oh, you know, we have to do thorough background checks on these people and that type of stuff costs money. And, you know, I'm sorry, I do background checks for my employees because I give them keys to people's houses.
Right.
And all of their worldly possessions and their animals. Many people who don't have kids, and these are their kids to them.
Yeah.
And the background checks aren't that expensive. It can be done a lot mm-hmm. cheaper.
Yeah.
You don't need the mountains of bureaucracy. So that's why this kid, you know, like you said, despite it, is going out of his way to try to help this adoptive family, you know, this family that has taken him in and has essentially raised him for the past, I guess, 4 years now, because they said it's the right. only one he's known since he was five, is, you know, it's sad that he has to even do this,
yeah.
but it's an amazing story anyway, yeah. because it just shows what can be done despite government getting in the way.
Yeah. You know?
And I'd love to see the government in this town try to come down and shut down his lemonade stand like they do all over the place.
Oh. No. Well, I wouldn't love to see that, but
oh, no.
wouldn't surprise me.
But the backlash on this one might be enough to get people to recognize how ridiculous that is.
Yeah.
But kudos to this young man.
So. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, and again, you know, it kind of goes to show, you know, like how anyone is capable of coming through adversity. If this 9-year-old kid can do it, you know, I mean, really anyone can.
Your life's not that bad.
Yeah. There's always somebody who's worse. That's for sure.